Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Mona, it has been pretty busy these last few weeks leading up to the deadline, hasn't it?
Oh my God, busy is an understatement. We have been submerged, saturated, every hyperbole that you want to bring out right now. I know it was expected that there was going to be a last minute rush, but this rush, Mark, has been very different from our previous rushes. One, we know that this is it. There's a lot of rumors out there saying that they might have a delay, but we believe that this is going to be it because it's not legislation or pending legislation. It's actually a regulation which has already passed and is going through on that particular date. And the second reason, Rebecca, I think has got to be the nature of the source of funds that we have.
Yes, back in 2015, we thought we were under pressure at that time, but the sources for, especially under the Indian cases, are a lot more. We're seeing more sources, more complications, even the time to take the funds to wire out of India, all of that has to do with this last minute rush.
Right. So there was an IIUSA meeting in Seattle last week, Mark. Even though I was moderating a panel, I had to bow out just because of pressure of work. But we were told in real time all that happened. Sarah Kendall was the main speaker, the chief speaker. And there were rumors that Sarah Kendall had confirmed that it's now acceptable to file an I-526 with less than $500,000 before November 21. That's not actually accurate. You have always been allowed to invest partial funds as long as, you know, you follow the criteria that one has to follow.
Correct. So as Mona was stating, there's two prongs to the regulations, right? That you've invested the full amount, the full $500,000, or there's actively in the process of investing the required amount.
Right. So, and Sarah Kendall's point at IIUSA did not change or certainly create a new regulation. She didn't change the, quote, actively in the process of investing, unquote, alternative. So we thought because this is being done so much right now and every investor who's coming or has been trying to invest within the last month or so is having issues that we would devote some time to talking about investing partial investment.
Correct. The issue is that it's not that it's anything new, as Mona explained earlier. This is things that we have done in the past, and we actually have approvals. The problem is doing such investments, the partial amount, with such short notice. Because it's just not, you have the problem where it comes to, Mona, right? You can't just show a mere intent. You have to show actual commitment.
Right. Well, actually, we should really start with explaining what the EB-5 law and regulations state. And I think that would be easier to sort of before we can move forward. And what kind of investments are considered okay. And interestingly, we have done a little bit of analysis on denials here and cases which have been approved. And it does seem that a lot of the denied cases, they do follow a pattern. A lot of them are entrepreneurial cases, Rebecca, and you would have thought entrepreneurial cases would have been easier.
Yes, that's what we thought. But, you know, you have to think about it. It's your own case. So everyone thought, oh, I can easily, you know, invest later on. You think that the person has the intent to move forward with their own project, whereas with a regional center, you actually do have to make that commitment.
Okay. So what does the EB-5 loan regulation state, Rebecca?
So it states that you have to have invested or actively in the process of investing required amount of capital that must be accompanied by evidence that the petitioner has placed the required amount of capital at risk for the purpose of generating a return. So evidence of mere intent to invest or of prospective investment arrangements entailing no present commitment will not suffice.
So I think that's really where we would need to hone in on. What are examples of mere intent to invest as opposed mm-hmm. to commitment to invest? So I think we have some examples that we can really relay
yes.
here.
Yeah, so mere intent to invest, meaning that, you know, others, a lot of our clients will come to us and say, well, I have the money, or I will have future earnings. That will not work.
What we're seeing right now from the Indian clients is the fact that the stock market has crashed or gone down.
Yes.
And the amount of the rupee versus the dollar is not what it should be. So people want to know, if I invest in a year or 6 months from now, the actual exchange rate would be higher. I would get a better return. I'd rather do it then. But we have been advising against that, because to us, that is not a commitment.
Exactly. There's no indication as to whether or not it will be better in 6 months. Any stocks, brokerage accounts, unless you can say with clear intent that your bond or stock will divest in the next 3 weeks, for instance, and you make sure that your funds are invested into the project, that might be okay. But you cannot say that I'm going to wait in the near future with no timeline and anything of that sort to say that I will invest at that time.
Right, which leads to another issue. So these partial investments are actually a lot more work than actually doing an ordinary petition with the 500,000, basically because we have to state the full reason, A, that the funds were not available at the time of filing.
Why it was not available at the time of filing.
Right.
And pretty much what we have to show is you pretty much have to source that second.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So what we're trying to say is that there are different types, like we said, what doesn't or what works. So for instance, if you have, like we were talking about the investments, or if you have land, for instance, and you show that you're in the process of selling the land, that would work.
Right. So here, this is one of the most common reasons that we have seen right now, especially from many of the East Asian countries, because there has been a problem with the sale of land. And I'm talking about Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India. Not just India alone, land has devalued and it has taken time to sell. So if you're in the process of, and you know that you're going to be able to sell, or you can show that your documentation was, for one reason or the other, has been a little delayed, and you are able to obtain the funding within the next few months, I believe you're all right. If you just say, I have land and I will intend to put it on the market, I think USCIS would be strict.
I agree. That brings up so many more issues that we're going to delve into in a bit. But again, you want to be very careful, and you have to show documentation, not just for, again, your initial filing, but also for the second partial investment.
So how would we actually show a commitment to the project, Rebecca, if I've already put maybe 150 or 100,000 into a project?
To show that, we would have, well, the project itself, we will have a commitment letter to show that, you know, you're going to invest the remaining amount with this remaining source, with how many days you will invest. I think that would show the commitment. What's also important is that with your source of funds itself, you will have an affidavit or a declaration to state where exactly, again, as we said, where your funds are coming from, and show documentations that it's just not a mere intent of this is where I'm getting my funds. This is actually happening.
And what happens if I can't come up with the remaining funds? What happens to the 100 or 150 or 200 I've already put into the project?
Well, you've made a commitment to the project.
Right.
So if, from my understanding, the project then has the right to keep those funds.
Yes.
Within the loan period that they you have made that commitment for.
Right. That's exactly correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to remember, and we've discussed this many times on this podcast series before, that it's a contractual commitment.
Exactly.
And whether you have contracted with 150 or 200, it's still a contractual commitment. And it's not the responsibility of the project to be able to return just because you haven't got the full amount.
Exactly. That's where the subscription agreement is very important too, to make sure that that's also filed. I know most people will have that filed, but it's one of the main documents to ensure that you have fully committed to the project.
What if you have a new set of facts with regards to the remaining amount of money coming in?
That becomes another issue, because as USCIS regulates that, you have to be approvable upon filing. So if you happen to change your source, say, for instance, you said my second investment amount will come from sale of property, and then all of a sudden the sale fell through, and now you're going with the salary that you've accumulated over the months. You know, USCIS could come back and say that at the time of filing, that was not your intentional source.
Right, but what happens if really my intention always was my future earnings? I just know that I can't put future earnings. I think that would then become evident.
Yeah, exactly. But I think you have to show, if for this to really work, you would have to show why and how the, if you said that your for an intentional investment was coming from the sale of property, you have to show some reasonable circumstance or something unforeseeable happened in order for USCIS, I think, to be say, okay, we will accept this filing because X, Y, and Z happened.
Right. And again, the regional center cases probably are a little easier than the entrepreneurial cases to prove, because USCIS makes it so tough on the business side to prove that the funds not actually in the business still qualify as the at-risk.
Yeah, that's where I think also the time period plays a major role.
Right.
Because you think, I think a lot of people get complacent thinking, oh, well, I have, you know, my project is ongoing. It's going to last forever. I have 2 years to make this investment amount, where in actuality, no. Your business, when you think about it, your business is up and running. It's making money within the 2 years. It should be up and running. So if you haven't invested your full 500 at that point, it wouldn't really make sense.
Right. I also feel that people who filed should be cautioned as to the amount of time they take before they put the remaining amount. We advise to do it as soon as possible, within 120 days or 180 days, but up to a year, I think, is okay.
Because the timeline is taking so long for USCIS to adjudicate these cases. I think before, it used to be they would adjudicate within the year, so you wanted to play it safe, but today we say a year because it is taking USCIS 2 years to
But at the same time, it shows an intention also.
Yeah, exactly.
It really confirms that intention. Mm-hmm. Finally, Rebecca, I think it is important to point out that, and this was brought up at the conference last week also, the amount of denials, especially in Indian-centric cases, has rocketed.
Yes, and we have seen that, well, we have not seen that. We've seen the numbers coming from USCIS, and that's why we say we have taken precautions. So our clients, you come in here thinking, oh, it's easy source, we can happen in 3 days. No. If you're going to file, we suggest ASAP or, unfortunately, wait
so
until 900.
Mark, to answer your question, we are exhausted.
Yes.
In doing 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. nights.
Weekends.
And really, it's just deciphering the documentation.
Yes.
I think overall, it's a lot less work than we had in 2015, but generally, it's more work.
Yeah, it's multiple sources that's hurting us.
So less volume, but more complicated, especially with all these partial investments concerns.
That's correct. Yes. That's correct.
Yes.
We do expect that there are going to be issues coming out. And I believe that USCIS, whilst they cannot take away the rules and regulations relating to the investment or in the process of investment, they are going to adhere to the regulations very strictly.
Yes. And especially, again, we remind everyone of the memo that came out. Remember, we discussed skeletal filings. So I think the partial investments will come into that memo, and they might deny just based on the fact that if they don't have enough evidence to show the commitment.
I am. I would avoid if I could, but I know nowadays we can't, so I'm sure we're going to revert to this subject again in the future, Mark.
Yes.
Well, Mona, it sounds like you and Rebecca and everyone there at Mona Shaw and Associates have been very busy up late at nights working through a lot of these issues. And I know we continue to be thankful for our listeners at EB5 Investment Voice, current clients, as well as prospective clients. And I think this information with regard to these partial investments, do you have the required amount of capital available? Is it all at risk? Do you have the intent of return? Is all of that information upfront and clear for the initial filing? Sounds like it's going to get, well, ahead of denials. And you don't want to take on cases that you feel are going to get denied right from the onset, right?
No, of course not, Mark. In fact, we have turned away cases recently. It's not just that we are really tired. We can keep on going. But the point is that if a person is going to be denied, it's just not worth it for them, for the project. Because first of all, the amount of money which will go up, the amount of money they will lose, the time that they will lose, not to mention the reputation and the whole angst around it.
it sounds like you're practicing good ethical representation, and we applaud you and everybody else there at Monashal and Associates for doing that.
And we would caution against anybody who wants to make a quick buck at this stage by taking on cases where there really is no real evidence, or the person, for example, if he wants to make a partial investment, just does not have the total amount.
Yeah, I think you're just taking a chance at that point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And luckily, we've got tons of free information here on EB5 Investment Voice, but there may be other practitioners out there that will say, sure, I will go ahead and put together the best filing possible of what you've given me, even knowing in the back of their head, hopefully if they have the experience and the knowledge that you have, knowing that it's probably going to get denied, but still raking the client through that. Not only is it a loss of money, but it's a loss of emotional capital as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Mona and Rebecca, thank you so much for taking a short break out of your busy day. So I will let you get back to it, because I know you probably have a long night ahead of you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.